So one other thing about this case that I thought was fascinating, I couldn't wait to ask you about, is his current situation.
Yeah. He's still alive. He's probably 6 months down after all this stuff. He's alive. I think he's taking Chinese herbs and mushrooms, and he's living large. He's playing golf, and his fatigue is gone. So in retrospect, certainly it seemed to have been chemotherapy induced. So that's the other amazing thing. Sometimes we take credit. We think we're making a big difference in patients with our interventions, and sometimes if you leave them be, they'll do fine. So he checked in just a few weeks ago just to find out if we had anything new going on.
Yeah, I was really struck by that, and I totally agree with what you're saying. I think it was really interesting. At what point would you send him to hospice?
So in California, we have an end-of-life act, and this is something he's opted for. So the end-of-life act, basically, when we believe the patient has less than 6 months to live, there's a law that has the capacity to prescribe them a cocktail that they can self-administer. I actually don't write the prescriptions. That's been my own philosophy. He did opt for the end-of-life act. He has a prescription, and he's still alive 6 months later. So it's sort of the best of both worlds. This person has the autonomy and the ability when it's all said and done, but he's living life well and enjoying it. And so it's a reminder that, you know, patients, giving them some time on their own is good, and some patients can get a whole lot of it. So he's a super appreciative guy, because we gave him permission to leave and go back home, and he did, and he's doing very well.
That's really fascinating. I was interviewing, I don't know if you know, Ross Kamage from Colorado, and they have a similar law. He was telling me about a patient he had. He was very uncomfortable, told me the same thing about he didn't want to write the prescription, but he was okay, I guess, doing the other part of it. And the interesting thing was he checked back with the patient, I guess, a month or so later, the family, expecting to get the family, and the patient was there. And the patient never used a prescription, and the patient decided, I just wanted to know it was there.
Yeah, no, and I think that's perfectly reasonable. The problem here in California is the cocktails are, I think, very difficult, cumbersome. There's a heavy dose of Secinol in the cocktails.
Right, and he was telling me the same thing. There's like 100 capsules and all this stuff.
Right, so here we can put it all in a solution. The problem is, patients have to drink it within 10 minutes to have the full effect.
Right.
And so they may fall asleep before they get, I mean, it's not ideal.
Crazy.
It's one of those laws that I think perfectly well-intentioned, but implementing it is not always so straightforward.
Have you had any patients who actually did that?
I have not. No, we've had some patients in our group have opted to do that. I have not had any do that.
When I heard that story originally from Ross and now from you, I was thinking, you know, maybe it's just like a safety thing for the patient to know they have it, but that if they're well managed, maybe they never will have to use it.
Well, we did some research a year ago. The law was just started in California, implemented in June of a year ago. And in Oregon, where they've had the capacity, patients have had the flexibility of doing this for a long time, very few people have opted in. And I believe in California, the number of patients who've opted for the cocktail is in the hundreds.
Hmm.
I mean, California is a big state. I have no idea if those people also took their lives or used the prescription. I just know that I think that's the number of people who got the prescription.